you got to take that first step and you'll be surprised what happens. And you know what? You might realize, oh, I made a mistake. I might have to start over. It's okay, right? There's no big scoreboard. Put yourself out there. Try. Don't give up.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium, quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.
All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod staff. With me today, I have Mr. Joel Zeff. Thank you for being here, Joel.
Thank you, Michael.
Absolutely. So Joel is a improv genius. He is a career public speaker, and he's also an author of this book right here. So Joel, thank you for being here, and I'll let you share a little bit about yourself and your book.
Thank you. It's my first podcast in front of a fireplace. Kind of a big deal. And the viewers can't see, but there's a screen above us with a fake fire that you can't see, which I'm not sure why we have the fake fire screen.
It's for the audience.
Okay. Out there. That yeah. They can't see.
Yeah. Well, you know, our audience right out here, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't see an audience.
You hear them say ta-da?
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. But I'm excited.
Yeah.
Regardless, I am a keynote speaker. And I wrote this book, Make the Right Choice, Lead with Passion, Elevate Your Team, and Unleash the Fun at Work. And excited to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, so I actually, full disclosure, I finished Joel's book yesterday. So now I know all of his secrets, his tactics, and I'm hoping that he still has some to pull out on me during this episode.
And you didn't mention that it's probably the greatest business book you've ever read.
Well, I thought that was a given. Yeah.
You should say it.
It's the greatest business book that I have ever read.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. That's verbal. Verbal is binding.
Yes, yes, as we learned this morning.
Very much so.
Yes.
I've spoken at more than 2,500 events. I use improv to talk about teamwork and leadership and passion and change. And for those of you who have never experienced improv, there's no script, there's no rehearsal. It was originally designed as an educational tool. So I've done more than 2,500 events. So the book is a combination of what improv taught me and what I believe and what I love about improv and how it helps create better teammates and better leaders and embrace change and be more present and in the moment. And then it's connected and combined with speaking at those 2,500 events, learning about all these incredible cultures of appreciation and cultures that want their team to be successful and educate them. And what I've learned from speaking and doing improv with all these audience volunteers from all these different industries. And so combined in the book with lots of ideas, things that I've learned over the years. And I want people to laugh. I want people to giggle when they read. You know, we talk about some of the corporate speak and some of the funny things that happen.
That landed with me.
Yeah, yeah. The acronyms.
Yeah, the acronyms. Yeah.
Yeah. And probably the dumbass managers.
Yeah, the dams. Yes.
The dams.
Yes.
They're out there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they're more prevalent than
I've had a few.
Like, yeah.
You've probably had. We've all had a few.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was fun kind of recapping all the bad management that you experience in a mm-hmm. book. And so you can laugh about that years later.
Yeah.
And I think when people read that book, I think they'll probably see some of the managers that they've had and then kind of try to avoid those managers. And what is a great manager? What is a great leader? Which is going to help you find your joy in work. And you're going to be fulfilled and rewarded, and that should be your guiding light.
Yeah, I think that for me, I've had both, where it's like some people think that if they're hard on you like a football coach in high school, that that's how they get you to do things. Yeah. I don't respond well to that.
I don't think anybody does.
No. But
unless you're a football player.
It might be like the intimidation factor, though. I feel like a lot of people...
I don't think that works.
It doesn't work. I'm saying maybe that's why people don't speak up.
Yeah, I don't understand why people... you know, there's always someone that's going to give you opportunity. There's no reason to stay at a job with a manager that just, you know, sucks the joy mm-hmm. out of work. No matter what you do, you should be, it should bring you joy. You should love what you do. You should be fulfilled no matter what you do. I talk in the book about one of my first jobs working in a movie theater, right? Making, I think I said $2.85 an hour. And I'm pretty sure that was below minimum wage. And I'm not exactly sure legally how that happened. But I'm working in a movie theater. I'm a teenager. I'm cleaning up people's trash. So I wouldn't say that's, you know, the job that I aspired to, but that was the job that I had.
Right.
And I still found a way to have fun at work and to have joy picking up people's trash. And when you learn how to do that, then no matter where you work, you're going to figure out how to find that joy. So it doesn't matter what you're doing as you work through your career. You're not going to start your career at the most ultimate job, the greatest job. You're working to reach a goal, and you're learning along the way. That's part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think my generation too, we tend to have this, not everyone, you know, I've been guilty of this sometimes, but that entitlement thing where you think, well, you know, I've put 2 years in, I should be able to level up and make this or have this title.
Right. Or have the perfect job.
Right.
With the perfect opportunity.
And be happy all the time.
Yeah. It yeah. just, that's not how it works. You know, I didn't start my speaking career and like, oh, I'm speaking at 100 events a year and I'm, you know, I'm on these awesome stages and in these awesome locations. No, I was giving it away for free. Mm-hmm. I could tell you some crazy stories of when I started. And if you gave me a hoodie and like a gift card to Chili's, I was thrilled, right? That's what I was speaking for.
Yeah.
And I was sometimes lucky to get that. There were plenty of times I was getting nothing. And, you know, but you're finding your way. You're building your career. You're in each step in that journey is going to teach you something. Mm-hmm. And you can't, you don't start here. You work your way up. And then that's when you realize, okay, this is what I want. This is what I need to be fulfilled and happy and rewarded. In the book and in my keynotes, I talk about the magic foundation of opportunity. We want opportunity.
This episode is sponsored by Dive Fit. Dive Fit is a faith-based clothing brand rooted in Christ and built on consistency, structure, and personal growth. Dive Fit's mission is to help people show up stronger in their faith, their health, and their daily lives. Check out their collection today at die-fit.printify.me.
I'd say one thing I wanted to mention on that, and it's at the very end of your book, is you were talking about how, you know, even if you're trying to make something better, it's trying to make a bad situation good, there's a point where you just have to identify the stress and just be done with it. And I think for a lot of people, especially people that don't have like a huge base of money just laying around to get them by for a period of time, it, in concept, it sounds simple to just leave a job because it's you're not happy. But when you have people counting on you, like what's your take on that?
I think is, I'm not saying quit your job and not have another job. I'm saying don't be satisfied.
Right.
There's always another job. Get an, you know, find your next job.
Yeah, okay.
Before you...
That wasn't specific.
No,
yeah.
I'm not telling you to walk off like Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
That was
it sounds cool.
That was like, an old reference, by the way. That was kind of... an old reference.
I remember that.
I'm not saying, you know... I'll give you another old Johnny Paycheck. You remember that song? Take This Job and Shove It?
No.
I think that was from like the 70s.
Sounds like a good song, though.
Yeah. You never heard of Johnny Paycheck?
No.
Take this job and shove it. Yeah. I'm not working here no more. Are you serious?
I never heard
of it. All right, you're going to have to look that up.
I am now.
That is an
I have to put a clip in here of it.
Yeah, that is an old reference.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
I'm not saying just quit and walk out.
Yeah.
I'm saying fine, but don't be satisfied, right? Don't get where you're in a point where you just kind of get lazy and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm not happy, but I'm getting paid. Mm-hmm. You should be getting paid and you should be happy, right? Your work should bring you joy no matter what you're doing. And if you don't have the right manager that's giving you appreciation, that's giving you opportunity, then I promise there's somebody else down the street that wants to give someone like you opportunity, because what do they get back in return? They get a passionate, energized team member that's going to help them reach their goals. You're going to help me reach my goals, my numbers, be a better leader. I want you. So don't ever feel like I got to just, well, this is the only job I can find. There's plenty of jobs. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've worked with a lot of different companies, a lot of different industries. And what I've learned is that no matter what's happening, the economy, recession, you know, COVID, whatever, people are still hiring. All my clients are always hiring because they're always looking for great, talented people that's going to help them. And so when you put yourself out there and you have that energy and that passion and that drive, companies want that. Don't feel like, oh, I'm in a situation. I don't like this situation. I don't like my manager. I'm not being fulfilled. I'm not being happy. It's not bringing me joy, but I'm getting a paycheck. That's a sad way to live.
Yeah.
Right? And no matter what the situation is, you know, go back to, I was working at that movie theater for $2.85 an hour.
Right.
Right? And picking up people's trash and leaving my job smelling like a hot dog machine, right? Or popcorn.
There's worse things to smell like.
There is. But I don't think you want to smell like hot dogs and popcorn. But I realize I need to find happiness. I need to be happy working. And so you make those choices about helping the people around you, about choosing to embrace change, about being more present in the moment. And I didn't know that's what I was doing back then, you know, as under reflection, figuring out I had to be happy. I was just kind of a kid just trying to make jokes or make light of the situation or bring some kind of happiness, right, to be fulfilled. And that's what I learned from that job, that even the worst job, you should still find a way to be happy and bring joy to what you're doing. And do your best, right?
Would you say that's the same concept as people saying, like, if you don't have happiness when you're poor, you're not going to have happiness whenever you're rich just because you become rich, right?
Wow, that's deep. Yeah. That is, someone should put that on a poster.
Yeah, I might. I might put it on a t-shirt.
Like with a cat
hanging
from a tree.
A cat with a gold jacket on.
Yeah, you know, I bring out the gold sparkle jacket for the really special podcast, and here we are. Because I received a watch from
Tin Can Timepieces.
Uh-huh. So well deserved of the sparkle jacket.
Yeah, absolutely. They come in this box too. This is pretty cool. Joel was impressed by the
packaging. I was very impressed.
Thank you, Scotty.
Yes, very impressed.
And I've got two on. You know, yep. Some people ask me why you wear two watches on a podcast.
Why not?
I say because every time I have a podcast and someone watches it, they ask me why do you have two watches on? So they're looking at the watches.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
What? There's no rules?
Yeah, there's no rules.
Who said you can only wear one watch?
Yeah.
I don't want to meet that
this
guy.
This is my improv, my dressing improv.
Wear three watches. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
Do you?
I do want to hear about the Lucky Harmonica in the Cliff Notes version.
The Magic Harmonica.
The Magic Harmonica.
So when I lost my job, I was working at a newspaper. I moved to Dallas 6 months prior. So I just moved to Dallas. I'm in a one-bedroom apartment, hardly any furniture. And moved across the country for this job. And they called me on a Sunday, and they said, tomorrow's the last paper. Come clean out your desk. That's it. I lost my job. And so most people losing their job, you know, you feel stress, you feel confusion, you're angry. It was one of the greatest phone calls of my life. A weight had been lifted from my shoulders. It was a tough job. There was a lot of challenges. And so I walked out of my one-bedroom apartment. I grabbed my harmonica. And I don't play the harmonica. I'm tone deaf. I don't have any musical ability. But I bought this harmonica, I think, at a college lecture. I know I bought it in college. I think it was at a lecture. I guess a famous harmonica player, and they were selling harmonicas. Mm-hmm. I don't have that memory anymore. And so I took the harmonica, and this was not a common practice. I didn't just walk out the door and go, I should grab my harmonica. So I took my harmonica and I got down the newspaper to clean out my desk. And everybody, again, range of emotions, confusion, angry, sadness. And I found myself on the back loading dock. And the media, radio stations, TV stations, other newspapers covering the daily paper closing. That's a big deal. And so I kind of looked around. And I don't know why, I didn't have this plan. I don't know how this entered into my, well, I think I'm going to go down the back loading dock where the media was and play the harmonica. I don't know why I made that decision. So I picked up my harmonica and I went, bow, 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 bow. I lost my job. Bow, 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 bow. I got no money. Bow, 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 bow. They told me to clean out my desk. Bow, 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 bow. I got the newspaper blues. And I just kind of went off, right? And the camera, you could, it was like the movies. Like the camera, you could hear it focusing. Like, because a person playing the harmonica when a newspaper is closing or anybody losing their job, that's a unique experience. That is not a normal reaction to losing your job. So that brings attention. And so I was doing it for like 3, 4, 5 minutes and just having a great time. And someone grabbed my elbow. I don't remember. I can't see that person anymore. I don't know if it was a man or a woman. And they said, they told me to stop. And they said, you will never work in this town again. I remember that. It was like a movie, like a film noir movie. You'll never work in this town again, kid. Obviously wrong. But that's pretty cool when someone says that to you. And so I forgot about it. And then we gathered at somebody's apartment, somebody's house for a wake. The newspaper closed and we're you know, we all lost our jobs. And we turned on the local news and there I am playing the harmonica to kick off the story of this, I don't know, whatever, 120-year-old paper, 150-year-old paper, I don't know. It was, you know.
That's awesome.
You know, like this crazy kid going, bow, 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 I lost my job, bow, 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 I got no money. But what it did, and I wrote, it's the second chapter of my book. It's probably my favorite chapter. And I talk about, under reflection, all the things that that taught me and what I was learning in that moment and reducing my stress, right? Losing your job is stressful.
Right.
Doing that, making that choice, reduced my stress. It gave me confidence. It really made me focus on who I am. And it put me in a frame of mind to find success. And I talk about it. In fact, let's look at Michael. You know, I talk about all the different embracing change and disruption, focusing on the moment, taking a risk, being who you are, creating confidence, choosing your attitude. All these were choices that harmonica, magic harmonica moment taught me.
Yeah.
And I carry that through. And it really was an important moment. It really did allow me that space and built my confidence and reduced my stress in a situation where I just moved to a new city. I just lost my job. And so what I want people, when they read that chapter, to think about is, what is your magic harmonica moment? What is your moment that's going to help you find that success or move forward or get through that tough time or that challenge or that disruption that's difficult? And having something like magic harmonica, what is your magic harmonica? It doesn't have to be a harmonica that allows you to make some of those choices to bring you that happiness and joy.
It sounds a lot like identity too, because it's so easy to work for, maybe you really liked your job, maybe you didn't, but you kind of have that identity that's in the job. You're like, maybe, I'm sure you speak to a lot of VPs and C-suite people that, if they didn't have their title, some of them may thrive, some of them may be devastated because their identity was not in themselves, really. It was in their career. Do you see that a lot?
Yeah, and I think it is hard to get tied up in all that, right? And I don't, wherever, whether you're entry level, middle, just starting your career, like my daughter just graduated college, she's just starting her career. So it's fun to listen to her and, you know, just being brand new in the workforce and just through her eyes and through her experiencing and listening to what she's going through. It's really, it's quite different than someone like, you know, a C-suite level or VP level that's been 15, 20 years. But I want everyone, my belief is that you should have fun at work. It should be joyful, whatever you're doing. And I think that happiness is going to lead to success. You're going to be a better communicator. You're going to be a better teammate, a better leader. You're going to be more innovative. And whatever, if you're a salesperson, you're going to be a better salesperson. You're going to take care of the customer. If you're in management, you're going to be able to be a better leader for your team if you're happy. And if you're, you know, and that fun at work is important. And again, in the book, I talk about the myths surrounding fun at work.
Yeah, I actually have that on here to talk about. It's, you know, happiness building versus team building. You mentioned that in the book a couple of times where it's like, you know, a lot of people say that we're doing a team building exercise. And you're not really building the team. You're just having fun, which is, I think, super necessary as well. But you do talk about how that necessary thing is not team building. It's happiness.
No. Your team is already built.
Right.
So whenever you're saying, well, we're team building, the team's built.
Right.
We've already, that's not, it's happiness building where you want to bring experiences so that your team has happiness and joy. And hopefully that will carry forward when that team works together or when they have to deal with a change or disruption.
Do you think it usually does?
I think so. I think it's important. I think it's important to come together and do activities outside of work, you know, that is work sanctioned, you know, whether it's, I love great donation, give back, you know, doing something for a charity, you know, coming together as a team. And that right there, when you have that connection with your team, you're building something. You're building a connection. You're communicating. You're learning how to communicate. You're having fun together. And that will carry over to when you're in a situation at work doing a project, an objective, and you want that success. And so you're going to fall back on some of the things that you experienced when you work together in that fun, happiness building experience, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have that connection. You're building respect. You're going to, we're going to like, hopefully we're going to like each other.
Hopefully.
We're going to have that connection. We're going to like, oh, well, Michael's a pretty fun guy that I just learned. I didn't know that. And you might connect with people that you don't usually connect with. And then when you make that connection, what happens is you can ask for advice or you're working on a project together and you already have that foundation built. And that's going to help you create something, hopefully create something that works, that's special.
Yeah. And you kind of at that point know how to approach those people a little bit better and kind of skip over that getting to know you at work part.
Right.
Like the first thing that came to mind when you were talking about the charity happiness building stuff was we did, at one of the companies I worked for, we did an Alzheimer's walk in Dallas.
I love it.
It was Saturday. We all had to be there at 7:30 in the morning. And this is a sales environment. So usually salespeople are having a good time on Friday. And 7:30 a.m. is not the ideal situation to drive all the way to Dallas to do. But we all kind of came together on, you know, leading up to that Saturday. We were like holding each other accountable almost of like, are you going to be there? I better see you there.
Right.
And then just like you said, we did like a 5K walk with people that I was in a big office. I don't see them that much. I don't interact with, they're not on my team. But then after that, I remember there was a shift, at least for a period of time until maybe the next happiness building event. But there was a period of time where I felt like we were taking better care of each other because we respected each other for showing up to that when we didn't have to.
Yeah, that's a great story. And so many little things happen when you do that. And I'm sure there were people that complained. Like, I don't want to get up at 6 in the morning.
I did. I complained.
Yeah, you seem like the complainer. And I don't want to. But then once you get going and you do it, you're like, oh, wow, that was fun. And it's always, you got to take that first step. And then you take the second step and the third step. And you'd be surprised where you land. And, you know, you learn so much. And there's so much ROI, there's an acronym for you, on that investment of connection and spending time learning about each other. And when you make that connection, what happens? You create a partnership. You build respect. You see someone through a different perspective. And when you make that connection, that is the foundation for great teamwork for the next opportunity or the next challenge or the next goal. And that's going to allow you to find that success.
Yeah, can you tie that in a little bit?
No.
Improv?
Sure.
Because I know you have people, you've had, what, 30 plus thousand people come on your stage?
I don't know. I've never done the numbers. That's, are you, so 2,500 events, I probably, on the average, bring up 10 people, sometimes more. So let's just say 10. So that's 10 times 2,500. Is that 25,000?
Yeah.
That's, wow. Yeah. That's a lot. It's a lot more than that because there's lots of times where more people than 10 come up.
Do you find that they're able to build camaraderie like that, like immediately? Because that's a quick little thing.
It's pretty awesome. So improv, the way I do it is just kind of it's a visual storyboard, right? A lot of people use PowerPoint. We're going to play an improv game. And here's why it's so powerful. We're going to play an improv game. I'm going to take 3 audience volunteers. We're going to play this improv game. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be fun. That's the bottom. That's the minimum. Okay? I guarantee we're going to laugh, have fun. It's going to be entertaining, energizing. And then I'm using that as a visual storyboard. So now we've played the game. It's like 3-4 minutes. Now I'm going to explain to the audience the choices that those audience volunteers made and how they worked together as a team and how they communicated and how they were accountable and took ownership and how they were adaptable and embraced change. And we're going to point out these choices. So instead of me just saying, oh, with change, you got to embrace change. You got to be open and flexible change. You got to be prepared for change. What I'm doing is we're going to play an improv game, and I'm going to show you these audience volunteers making those choices. And that's very powerful when you see your peer, your friend, your colleague, just someone in the industry that's in that audience, jump up, play the improv game. 1, be successful. 2, be entertaining. 3, be creative. And you're definitely have a vested interest in why that happened. And now I'm going to peel back and I'm going to show you those choices that they made. And then those are the same choices that we have to make in our work that's going to help us embrace change or work together as a team, whatever message I'm focused on at that moment. And so it's very powerful. And you know, I have a lot of clients like, I don't know if my people are going to do improv. That's usually the voice they have when they do. I don't know. I don't know if my people are going to do that. 2,500 events, I promise your people are going to do that. 2, I don't need all of your people to do that. I need 9 of your people to do that. So Bob in accounting that hates his life and hates his job, I don't need Bob to come up on stage with me.
Do you ever make Bob come up?
No. I don't want Bob anywhere near the stage. I want people that want to be there. And in today's world, social media, everybody's on video all the time. There's way more people that want to be on stage in front of everybody. And no matter what group, whether it's a sales group, whether it's a manufacturing group. I was just with a group that manufactures in warehouses.
The conveyor belt?
Yeah, the conveyor belts, tracks. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the round and the metal and so they manufacture those. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, they were incredible, so funny and so creative. And I'm sure that I have plenty of manufacturing clients or potential clients that go, I don't know. And I go, I promise you, people want to have fun. They want to play. And the improv games are unique. And I'm just giving you that opportunity to play and have fun. And then we get to learn by playing these improv games. And then what I did was everything that we learned, I put in this book.
Yeah, and I saw in the book too, I read that a lot of leaders, whenever they don't show up for, like they're too cool for school on the stage, I mean, that's like a huge negative, and they don't even see it that way.
Yeah, probably. It's a huge tell.
Yeah.
Right, you're like, ee, ee, ee.
Yeah.
And the leaders that jump on stage with me, oh my gosh. The audience, first of all, immediately the audience reacts, because they're putting their manager, their vice president, CEO, in a situation they've never seen before. And then what happens? It humanizes them. That person loves to laugh and have fun. I love to laugh and have fun. What do you think that's going to create for the team? Respect.
Right.
And it's going to, and loyalty. And they're going to want to do great things. And they're going to be impressed. And they're going to be proud that that's my manager. That's my CEO. And he got up, or she got up, and did an improv game. That was awesome.
And drop the ego too. Like, you have to drop the ego.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, improv is a very inclusive art form. Everybody can participate at their own level. Mm-hmm. Is everybody going to be super funny? No, but everybody can participate. And it also, it's an equalizer. Everybody, the CEO can be playing an improv game with, you know, the person that started last week, right? And in an improv game, they are equal. Right. And that really impresses and makes a connection to the audience. Because when they see that success together, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. And I tell you what, every time that I present, every keynote, when I have audience volunteers that jump up on stage and what they do, I'm always amazed, surprised, inspired, energized. Sometimes these audience volunteers, they do things and I'm like, where did that come from?
In a good way?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Where you go, oh, that was amazing. That was incredible. And, you know, you just give them a little bit of opportunity. Remember, I'm giving them the opportunity to play these improv games, to be a leader, to be creative. And at the same time, what's the audience doing? They're laughing, they're applauding. So they're getting, in real time, positive support. And that's, again, very powerful to see this visually, what happens. And then the people on stage, they take more risks. They produce more. They're more creative. The more they laugh and applaud, the more they do. Mm-hmm. And that's just amazing. Like, when people jump on stage, you know, it's not like they jump on stage and they're off to the races immediately. They're a little tentative at first, but as soon as they get that first laugh, as soon as they get a little applause, the audience gives them positive support, you can see their body language, you know, change. Their eyes, their shoulders rear back, and they're like, oh, okay. And they're building confidence. And that, we haven't talked about it, those are those ta-da moments, mm-hmm. right? In the book, I talk about the spirit of ta-da. When my kids were younger, little, everything in their life was a ta-da. You celebrate everything. I'm sure your parents did that to you mm-hmm. last year.
Yeah.
Is your mom coming to pick you up?
3 years. So, hey, actually, she's in town today.
Well, she enough. Should come by. Yeah. So everything was a celebration. You know, they eat a cheese sandwich. Ta-da! You did it, buddy.
Yeah.
Right? You throw a
great
ball.
Work.
Like, ta-da! Everything. They, you know, we ta-da everything. And what happens, we build their confidence, right? And they get a big smile on their face. And whatever we're celebrating, they do more of. And so everybody has these moments. But as we get older, we stop celebrating. We just think, well, this is part of our job. This is what we're supposed to do. Well, why do I need to ta-da this? And we've emailed back and forth. And at the end of my emails, what do I put on the end of my email? What?
Ta-da. Ta-da.
Yeah. And you read that and probably go, oh, ta-da.
Well, yeah. Like, I'm sure you have a lot of different reactions
yeah,
to that.
Yeah, a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of first reactions of, yeah. Joel, who is this?
Or they look it up and they're like, Joseph, ta-da.
What does ta-da mean? It's, you know, ta-da is a celebration. It's a flourish. We did something. And the more we celebrate, it fuels our passion. Mm-hmm. And I think as you adults, they forget to celebrate. They forget each and every day we got to refuel that passion for whatever we do, whether we're in sales or manufacturing or HR or distribution or IT or accounting. We have to refuel. And that refuel is about celebration. Celebrating myself, celebrating the people around me. And that's why ta-da is such a big part of my keynotes in my book, of making sure that people understand the importance of celebration and what that means to our success and what that means to bringing joy to what we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
This episode is sponsored by Dive Fit. Dive Fit is a faith-based clothing brand rooted in Christ and built on consistency, structure, and personal growth. Dive Fit's mission is to help people show up stronger in their faith, their health, and their daily lives. Check out their collection today at die-fit.printify.me.
Are we back?
We're back. Yeah, so...
Do we have an intermission?
I thought we went and did something, didn't we?
Did. We put some more logs on the
fake
fire.
Yeah, we did. But we talk about the ta-da and the just like the refueling. And that leads to my favorite chapter of the book was chapter 11, Stay in the Game.
Really? That was your favorite chapter?
Yeah, I texted you whenever I had read it. And I was like, it was on a Monday morning at like 7. I think I finished it at 7:30. And it was like, okay, I needed that this week. Because
that's
it
awesome.
Talks about like the only way you can for sure fail is if you quit the game. And that refueling, like you probably have people in your improv that sometimes are so embarrassed or they don't want to be on stage or something that they're almost going to quit. And maybe someone picks them up and helps them and makes them stay in the game. So I feel like it's not, what I gathered is that it's not always that you have to just stay in the game yourself or be responsible for your want to stay in the game. That's the point of the teamwork and everything like that, is to help people push you to stay in the game when you don't really have the capacity to do so. Is that fair?
I think that's part of it. Improv, you know, in an improv game, that's where it comes from. You can do anything you want in the game, and the game will find success, right? You can be loud, you can be quiet, you can be funny, not so funny. You can be a leader, not a leader. The game will find a way to be successful. The only thing the game won't allow you to do is quit, is give up. There's a big rule in improv is that you can't say no. You say, well, let's go to grandma's house and get some cookies. And if we're in an improv game and I go, no, I don't want to go to grandma's house, well, then where do we go? I've just stopped your creative process, right? Mm-hmm. So I've quit. And if you quit, you give up, the game falls apart. To stay in the game means, okay, you might say something that wasn't funny or didn't work or went down the wrong path, but to stay in the game and find a way to be successful, that's the secret to improv. Take that to our work lives, to what we're doing each and every day. What does staying in the game means? It means not quitting, not giving up. We got to learn something new. We got to get out of our comfort zone. We got to try something different. Staying in the game means it's hard. It's not easy, but it's also fulfilling and rewarding when you stay in the game. You mentioned I did a LinkedIn post the other day about, I did a hike. I was in Oregon speaking and I had a free afternoon and I was trying to quit that hike multiple times, right? First, when I was driving to the hike, I was like, oh, it's rainy, it's chilly. You know, I don't know if I want to do this. You know, maybe I'll just go back to the hotel room and, you know, and then I'm like, oh, all right, let's get to the park. You know, so I was, just to stay in the game, to do that hike, I had to constantly answer my own questions. And, you know, once I started the hike, I was like, oh, I don't know, maybe I'll do about 10 minutes. And then I made that commitment that I'm not going to give up, that I'm going to stay in the game. I'm going to make it to the top. And for me, that was huge, right? And it's probably the most satisfying thing I did that week. That was my big ta-da moment. And I had a standing ovation and spoke at 3 events. My big ta-da moment was making it up a mile hike.
Yeah.
And that for me, I'm not in super shape. And so staying in the game, it's fulfilling. And it's just taking that first step and not giving up. And there's always negativity. There's always a reason to quit. On the hike, I didn't have the right shoes. It was raining a little bit. It was chilly. There's plenty of reasons, always reasons to quit.
Yeah.
But if you stay in the game, something special is at the end.
Well, and even too, like there might not even be, like you mentioned in the book, it's not about having the right answer or the right outcome. It's about having the outcome that was made by your effort. And that could mean, that could look 100 different ways.
Yeah, and not to give up.
Yeah.
And that's the best message I have ever presented in my keynotes. It's the best message I could ever teach my kids, is that if you stay in the game, you're going to find fulfillment. Mm-hmm. You're going to find joy, and it's going to be rewarding. But it's hard. You might have to learn something new. You might have to get out of your comfort zone. You may have to work harder, do something different, get lessons, find a mentor. But at the end, something special is about to happen, a big ta-da moment. And you only can get to that ta-da moment if you stay in the game. And that's what we should always be striving for, is those ta-da moments at the end of staying in the game. That's what fulfills us. That's what excites us. That's what brings us passion and joy and keeps us fueled so we find success, so we are great at what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Few closing questions.
Boom. Let's do it. Are they rapid fire?
Not necessarily.
Okay. I was I had my gold jacket rapid fire question answer, but all right,
you know,
sure.
We'll see how fast they come.
Okay,
out.
Let's yeah. go.
So, first question, a little yes. deeper.
Yeah.
What would you say to person out there listening that is maybe new in their career? Maybe they're in the middle of their career. Maybe they, what's holding them back is fear of public speaking, or what's holding them back is something like that. That if they could just get to the other side, they might experience what we just talked about, that ta-da moment of like, oh wow, if I just stay and if I just make myself do it, there is something special there. What would you say to that person?
Take the first step and then take the second step. And you'll be surprised what happens in a week's time, in 2 weeks' time, in 3 weeks' time. But you gotta take that first step in whatever you do. And are you going to be great at that first step? Probably not. But maybe that second step, you're going to get a little better, and that third step. And then by the 50th step, you got your footing. Now you're doing something. Mm-hmm. Now you're building confidence. But give yourself a little grace, right? You're not going to be perfect at the beginning. And staying in the game is about not giving up and not quitting and helping each other find that success. So stay in the game is also people around you giving you appreciation, positive support, opportunity. That's other people around you. You're making the choice to be more present and in the moment. That's going to help you stay in the game. Mm-hmm. Finding opportunity, positive support, that's going to help you stay in the game. Asking the question, how do I help the people around me be successful? That's going to help you stay in the game. Embracing change is going to help you stay in the game. But you got to take that first step, and you'll be surprised what happens. And you know what? You might realize, oh, I made a mistake. I might have to start over. It's okay, right? There's no big scoreboard. Put yourself out there. Try. Don't give up.
Thank you for that.
I think you're welcome. It was just the one question? I thought it was rapid fire.
No. Now we get to the more rapid fire.
Okay.
So, all right. Favorite side gig, per se, that you've done? Pizza Hut commercials, Dallas Cowboys commercials, different speaking.
That
things.
Is my side. Yeah, I do as an actor sometimes get commercials. That is by far my favorite to do. And you know, you don't really. Sometimes you get the money. It's not about you get very little, right? You don't get very much. And but what happens is you're in a situation. Here's why I love working on commercials and doing things like that, is that you have a group of people that are so connected in a team environment, and you have to because you're always short on time. And I am very inspired and energized to be part of that situation where everyone is working together in harmony to help each other find the success in a limited time. And that being on a set really creates that energy. So that would probably be, yeah, I've done commercials for the Dallas Cowboys and, it was a Pizza Hut commercial and McDonald's commercial. And,
that is so cool.
Yeah.
There's some like funny casual ones. For you. But
yeah.
We're like,
there's some funny ones. Yeah. A lot of them where I just make like, there's a commercial where I just have this, like, this is my look. Right. And, but it's always fun. Just did a bank commercial in West Texas. And
Cowboy hat?
No, I was a pastor.
Okay.
I was, yeah.
I can see you being a pastor.
I've reached that age where I've reached the age in my acting career where I'm the pastor. I was marrying, it was in a church setting and he was getting a alert from his bank while he was getting married. That was the funny little thing. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, you could definitely play that part.
Thank you. I was
the glasses help too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was real method. So yeah. I married 100 people.
Wow.
That was a joke. Yeah. I just went out.
It's really hard to tell what's a joke and what's not. Because you're always thinking like, is Joel gonna pull something out? Like as soon as I met you, I was like, we got to see, is he messing with me right now or not? And I love it.
Yeah,
on my toes.
We should probably mention that this podcast is here because of me.
Yes, so that is actually one thing I should have mentioned at the beginning. So Joel and I met in Nashville. We actually only live 15 minutes apart from each other in Texas. But we met in Nashville
at a conference.
and we're...
You came up and talked to me.
Yeah, I got tired of making my sales rounds.
Yeah, I don't know why. And for some reason, I don't know, because you were not going to do anything for me. Like, I wasn't... You're not going to hire me for a conference.
I know.
So, yeah, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We were at a Topgolf, right?
Yeah, we're at Topgolf, and I had already made my sales rounds, and I was like, this guy looks like he's just... chilling, hitting some golf balls, having a drink. That looks like the guy I want to be around. So yep. Walk up, and we're like, hey, can we share this bay with you?
Yep, had a good time.
We get to talking. He casually mentions that he's going to be the keynote speaker for the conference the next day. I'm like, wow, that seems pretty big. And then yeah. We get to talking about speaking and podcasts and stuff. And he really inspired the idea to do this podcast.
Planted the seed.
Absolutely.
So this podcast... I'm the godfather.
Yes, yes.
Yeah?
Yes. And so since I've lost money on this podcast, if you want to, I was thinking about this. If you want to make money when I make money,
yeah,
should you incur some of this cost up front too?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think that's how it works. Gotcha. I just watched the Godfather movie. Okay. I don't think he invests.
Yeah. No, I just figured I'd
take a little piece.
Yeah, throw that out there. Yeah. I didn't know if that's
how it works. No, but I got this pretty awesome watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm Godfather-esque.
Yeah, so if you like listening to this podcast,
it's my fault. It's my fault. And it's pretty exciting to be. I'm glad that I gave you that inspiration.
Yeah, I appreciate that
a lot. You're very welcome.
Next question. Favorite book other than your own?
Wow. I wasn't expecting that.
I know, but improv.
I wasn't expecting that. Man, you know, let's think about that. I don't have a quick answer off the top of my head.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of books that I remember really enjoying. Actually, let's just start with my favorite recent book. I read Mel Brooks' biography. That was a really, loved that. And Steve Martin's recent book that he wrote. That was probably my two recent books that I've read and I really enjoyed.
Nice.
And probably Steve Martin and Mel Brooks are two of my, I would say, comedic influences and people that really were a big part of my comedy foundation.
Awesome. Next question. What is the biggest company or the most well-known company you've ever spoke for?
Well, I've worked with 2,500 events. I mean, you could look at the Fortune 100 and most of them I worked with,
yeah.
You know, McDonald's and American Airlines and Southwest Airlines and T-Mobile and Samsung and Bank of America and Walmart.
Wells Fargo too, right?
Wells Fargo. Yeah,
is it the IRS that I saw as well?
I have spoken. Yeah. Yeah. I've spoken with a lot of different government agencies. I've spoken a lot of my biggest audience. Is 8,000. Wow. That was the biggest audience. And that was 2 years ago in Vancouver was my biggest.
Does that affect how you approach these speeches, the audience size?
It's pretty awesome. You know, 8,000 people, you know, the people at the back are at a whole different meeting than the people in the front.
Yeah.
And it's just making that connection, no matter it's 8,000 or 1,500 or 500 or 100 or you're speaking to 30 people. It's making that connection and engaging. And, the energy of 8,000 people laughing is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And what was really that 8,000, 60, out of that 8,000, 1,500 was from US and Canada. The other 6,500 was from around the world and was being translated in like 12 different languages. And so that was really inspiring and energizing. And that was probably one of my absolute coolest experiences.
That's awesome.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that affect, do you still get nervous at all?
I have never gotten nervous.
Really?
Yeah, that's weird. I know. Even in high school, and I did a stand-up routine for the whole high school, all 2,000 people in high school, as a senior in high school. And I never had that get nervous gene.
That's very unique. Because
I don't know why.
Speakers, even well-known speakers, they'll tell a story of like, yeah, I was 26 years old and got on stage and I got nervous and I started sweating and I walked off the stage and everyone was confused.
Oh, I bombed.
Yeah.
Sure. I've done plenty of stand-up shows where I'm like, cricket, cricket, And you walk off and you're like, woo!
Yeah.
I remember one time speaking, I think I talked about it in the book, Concrete Pipe Association. This is early in my career. Concrete Pipe Association. I didn't hear any laughter. And I'm like, and I get off the stage and I'm sweating and I'm like, woo! And then people came up to me and go, you know what? We haven't laughed like that in years. So they had a great time, but they just didn't.
Yeah.
Their laughter just wasn't as big as what I was expecting. I'm like, if you guys had a great time, great. Because, whoop!
Yeah,
you know?
I didn't know it.
I didn't know it. And so you don't, it's hard. So sometimes you don't want to judge. Sometimes you're quick to judge. And but yeah, I never had that nervous gene. I don't know why.
That's good.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those things.
Awesome. Last question.
Yep.
Most famous contact in your phone?
That's a really, actually a good question. There's a lot. I have quite a few. I don't know if I want to.
Well, why don't we name five?
I've got several Olympians.
Wow.
Here's the funny thing about being a speaker is that you meet a lot of people that are speakers or want to speak, and you're all on the kind of the same level. But what they've done pre-speaking, you're like, wow, that was pretty cool, you know, but everybody's kind of on the same level. And so you just meet a lot of different people. I would say, one of my favorite testimonials is from my good friend, who's the director of the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders. And she wrote a little testimonial.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, she's that Netflix show, Making the Team, which is a pretty big deal. So maybe she's, sure, Kelly, my friend Kelly.
Nice.
And she wrote a nice testimonial. Also, in my testimonial, Carly Patterson, Olympic champion, gold medalist, Olympic gold medalist, USA Gymnastics.
Wow, maybe you know, if I ever get famous, then you could do an updated version. I could write you.
You could. I would love it. I would love it. Yeah. Yeah. But my son makes jokes about people in my phone, you know? Like, he's like, he'll say, how many hypnotists do you have in your phone? I go, I think three.
Really?
Yeah. He goes, how many magicians? And I go, maybe five.
How many actors?
A few. Yeah, a few. Yeah. He's like, how many jugglers? Six, you know,
yeah.
You know, it's just a joke.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because you meet these people on stage, comedians, and you know, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. It's pretty cool. I tell you, she's not in my phone, but my favorite celebrity speaker that I've worked with is Marie Osmond.
Okay, nice.
From the Osmond.
Yeah.
She was spectacular. She's not in my phone. She didn't give me her phone number.
Yeah.
She was absolutely my favorite celebrity speaker that I've worked with.
Athletes?
Other than
Olympians?
Yeah.
Like NFL?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a few. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because a lot of them, there's a lot of speakers and connections and you meet people and it's pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Joel. It's been a pleasure having you. Thank you for taking the time to come on. I had a great time. I hope you had a great time as well.
Yeah, thank you. Hang on, Michael. Where can they find the book?
Oh, yeah. Where can they find the book?
Well, it's available, Michael, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever you purchase your books. Audible. There's an Audible version. There's a ebook version.
Kindle. On Spotify.
Kindle. And so wherever you and anybody who watches this or listens to your podcast and they go to my website, joelzeff.com, say, man, I saw you on Michael's awesome podcast. Send me a note. I'll send you a free chapter on change. I'll send you a free chapter, a little trial chapter on change.
Awesome.
Otherwise, buy the book, Amazon, and you can go to my website, which is joelzeff.com.
Awesome.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Joel.
Appreciate it. Woo! Greatest podcast in the history of podcasts.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces, hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.